Who's gonna wait? What do you don't say cut. What do you say when you open? Like
action.
Action. Yeah, that's it. Okay. Who's gonna call action?
Me.
Okay.
Action.
Hi, this is Micah Redding.
This is John Yates.
And I'm Ryan Hogan. Welcome to the Singularity.
This is our first official broadcast from the Singularity podcast, I believe.
It's not one of our pre-recordings.
Right. We've done like three previews, something like that. Pre-releases.
Prequels.
Yeah, prequel.
Prequels.
Prequel episodes. Yeah.
Well, now they're officially prequels. See?
Right.
Because remember we were talking about that in one of the previous
ones.
Yeah,
what if they did, if we prequels never did a real
without,
one? without the
without
sequel? No.
Without.
So anyway, this is the first official podcast of broadcasting from the Singularity.
Still as off the cuff as
right, just as usual,
live and uncensored.
Right. So we thought this time we would talk about art, technology, science, the Singularity, and all that kind of stuff. So I wondered.
Well, we're combining it with. Another project, correct?
This is Art Technology Science Week on Eminent Human.
Yeah, tell us a little about Eminent Human.
Well, Eminent Human is your source for all things human, the greatness, the glory, and the agony of being human. And this week we are featuring articles, posts, content from people who are kind of exploring the intersection of art and technology. And so we've got some posts up there this week, and this podcast kind of dovetails right into that. So
that always reminds me of that Who song, Eminent Front.
Oh yeah. It's a put on.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. So, but let's, since this is broadcasting from the Singularity, let's start with talking just introducing the idea of the Singularity for those of you who aren't familiar with it. John, would you feel comfortable taking us on the ride of a lifetime here?
Yeah, sure.
Strap
in. Yeah, the roller coaster
we're
of the Singularity.
The exponential.
Singularity in 30 words or less is the point in human history that many believe we are quickly approaching where technology begins to grow exponentially, and at that point of the Singularity, humans as a race can no longer keep up, and at that point something happens. There's a lot of contention on what that something is, but we know that that is something that is eminently approaching.
And one of the reasons we know this is because of Moore's law, which traces the acceleration of computing technology. It's doubling something like every 18 months, something like that. And it's been doing that for decades, keeps doing it. So we just have to follow the line and kind of see where it leads us. So that's the Singularity. Ryan, in your... in talking about some of this stuff, you've brought up another term, the technium. Can you explain that to us?
I'll try. The technium, it's a term that was coined by Kevin Kelly.
He's founder of Wired Magazine.
Founder of Wired Magazine. He somewhat recently, but not too recently, released a book called What Technology Wants. He also has several articles talking about the technium on his blog, so you should check that out. What is it, kk.org,
I think.
Yeah. But basically, he coined the term the technium so he could have a functional definition for things that we've created that are beyond technology, but it also includes technology. So anything from art to culture, to society, so all these human constructs. And should I say some more about what I mentioned in the article? Just basically...
Sure, yeah.
Well, I'll be very brief, but I think the main point, the crux of the article, is saying that as we reach this moment, the singularity, that the technium is becoming more self-organizing. We've kind of put it into motion, but it's kind of
taking on a life of its own.
A life of its own. And as that happens, the technium starts to dictate the mediums, and that's already, you know, evident by you know, ebooks and digital music, and those are just little minor examples. But the technium is starting to dictate the medium, and the medium dictates the experience. And as an artist, you know, it's kind of an unnerving thing to see all this happen, but it's also very thrilling and exciting. Mm-hmm. And as an artist, I have to respond and say, okay, so what are the implications of this on the way I make art and the way art is viewed, et cetera.
Mm. So that's kind of this core idea is of the singularity, is that our technology is kind of getting to the point of powering itself and kind of directing its own course. And that's what we're kind of looking at with the technium, as you say, is now kind of shaping. We kind of created it and gave form to it, and now it's kind of dictating the forms that that we have to supply. So I should have mentioned all three of us are kind of involved in art and media and so forth. So you know, we're not professional in any, you know, too many other ways, but we've got that. So so John, what do you think? What do you think this means?
I think when talking about the singularity and pairing it with art and with culture, I think there are two different ways or two different approaches to look at it. The first would be from a philosophical standpoint. What does that mean? What is art as technology plays more and more of a role in all of our lives and in the formation and creation and viewing of art? Does art itself actually change? And then I think the other aspect to look at it from is that I think art is one thing that may really not change that much through the singularity. And that may be one piece of humanity that we're actually able to really hold on to. The medium that I work in most is photography. And I think probably out of any art form that there is, photography is the most influenced by technology and by the rampant increases in availability of technology. And so you see, you know, the amount of megapixels that are in cameras today just is completely unheard of. And you look back 5 years ago and people, you know, never thought that we would get to, you know, 20 megapixels, and here we are today at that. And we have these cameras now, and it's very interesting to me because all of the manufacturers of cameras, Nikon, Canon, they all tout the auto functions on the cameras. They have better auto exposures, better auto focus, better auto metering, all of these things that are taking away from what the actual artist, the actual photographer does. And so I almost see that as a detriment, and that we're relying more and more on technology to fuel and to create that art. And so I kind of take a different approach. I love technology, but when it comes to art, I almost feel like it should be a little removed from the artistic standpoint, and let us retain a little bit of our humanity through that.
Do you think in being a photographer and going, you have this world where everybody has these, you know, crazy sophisticated cameras. If you back off of some of that, some of those automatic features or options or whatever, do you think, are you able to keep up with the other people who are, you know, just going for everything that comes along?
Yeah, that's a great point. Some of the photographers that I'm really following now who are professionals who are making money in the industry have actually gone backwards and are actually reverting to film and older body cameras because it does give them a little bit more freedom in the creativity. I love new things and new technology and the abilities that it affords us, but I don't ever see a point where technology or what comes out of the singularity can create art. I feel like whatever that is, there's some human element within us, within our imaginations, our dreams, whatever that is. I think that's the one thing that stays behind that really defines us as a race, as a species, as that ability to create art.
I don't, well, this really isn't related. Well, it kind of is.
Go for it.
I wouldn't say I'm very prolific with the art that I make, but it's kind of a problem I have. I think people equate, you know, being prolific with, you know, being a good artist. And see, I think you should be careful to what you disseminate. Only disseminate what you're proud of. There are things, you know, that I would consider just me playing around. I wouldn't present that to the public that people present. But with that idea, I wanted to develop a program that would help me. I would create the program so it would create art. It just
right.
kept producing art because I wanted to be the most prolific artist alive. And then I wanted it to continue even after my death so right. that I wouldn't have art that was released posthumously. It would be created posthumously. And then I discovered that Brian Eno essentially did that.
Of course he did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, from a what is art standpoint, do you guys feel like something that is created from a computer program or an artificial intelligence, can that be art?
To me, the definition of art is kind of like perpendicular to that question. So I would say right now, it's very ambiguous to me. Like, you know, the stuff that, and I haven't really seen this automatically created stuff that Brian Eno does, but I've seen some other automatically created things, and it's ambiguous to me whether they constitute art or not. I don't think they constitute particularly great art because... trying to think of a good kind of definition, but I think that art speaks to a different characteristic than just its composition. I don't know. What do you think, Ryan?
Well, I'll take it from my objective, what I want to do as an artist. And we've talked about this before, Micah.
Mm-hmm.
We want to create new landscapes,
mm-hmm.
or new realities, or alternate realities.
Yeah.
And we also want to create a multi-sensory visceral experience.
Yeah.
And so, see, we've talked about this too, and I don't know. I vacillate a lot. There have been moments when I just wanted to quit being an artist because I thought the artist was irrelevant.
Right.
But I don't know. There are things
very
that
artist thing to say.
Mm-hmm. You know, something we talked about. We weren't sure if that artists were able, and maybe I'm just not around the right artists because I am kind of in a a vapid place. Yeah. Anyway, but so we were thinking maybe like engineers and other individuals and other things, whatever they are. We hadn't really named them. We're able to create a more visceral experience than a lot of the art that I see artists right. making.
I think what we'd kind of talked about maybe is that there's a lot of art that's pursuing the same sorts of things people were pursuing hundreds of years ago or something like that, where the context of that art no longer connects in the same way to our reality. So it's not the same thing to go walk through an art museum as it was 100 years ago. And if you're trying to do the same things in an art museum that you were, that people were trying to do 100 years ago, then you're probably going to increasingly not be communicating as art, and you're going to be communicating as something else. So that's, I don't know. Does that...
Yeah, it's not art, it's antiquities.
Well, and so as we move forward into the singularity, and you know, we're all viewing art on our smartphones or, you know, smart devices, whatever.
On artsy.
You know, do we as artists and as, you know, singularityists
isn't the correct term singularity?
Singularitarians.
No. There's that extra
singularitarians.
I don't know. It's on my Twitter bio profile. No, it's just an awkward word.
With that.
It's an awkward word, but
that's what it is.
I mean,
huh?
That's what Kurzweil uses it. Sorry, but that's your way off track.
As artists and as those who look forward to the singularity, do we let that happen? Is that how we want art to be viewed? Is that a piece of us that we're okay with, you know, moving forward and progressing, or do we hold on to that antiquated?
One thing we were talking about the other day at the Nashville Singularity Meetup, there's a plug, was that somebody was saying, you know, we owe it to ourselves to engage with the most high intensity media we can. And so they're essentially saying, like, books are maybe a waste of time because it's very low density or low resolution. But I would suggest that actually the value and the density of the of worth, I guess, whatever, in a book, and in a movie, are hard to compare. Just because a movie has higher resolution images doesn't actually mean that it's conveying more useful information.
High resolution.
Right.
Ideas.
Right. High resolution ideas. And that's something that I've really been thinking about a lot. Venkat from ribbonfarm.com, he has talked about how in the past, you know, a couple hundred years ago, words were very, very expensive. And so people who wrote wrote with a depth and an intensity of those words that to convey as much as possible in the smallest amount of space. And so increasingly words have become very cheap, not just in printed books, but now, of course, you know, spread through the internet and so forth.
Yeah, like you can write an article and only get 25 cents a word.
Right. And so the density of our ideas has decreased because we're not restrained in that way. So in that respect, I think it makes sense that at least for in many instances, old books probably have a greater density of information, high resolution ideas, better and more complex artistry than a lot of things today, whether they're movies or books or something like that, simply because the event, essentially the price of creating these things has just plummeted, meaning that the barrier to entry has dropped a lot. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. And going back to photography, I mean, we see that a lot too. With any piece of technology, the barrier to entry gets increasingly low as we move forward in time. And so you see in a form like photography, where it used to be very expensive to create, one photograph and put all of that energy into creating that one frame, you know, now, I can shoot off, you know, 500 frames, you know, for the same cost on my digital body that it would, you know, for someone on, you know, on a film camera. So looking at that from an artistic standpoint, I almost feel like it does cheapen things when there's not that pain, to actually have to go in and create, if it's, you know, it's a cost or if it's difficult. I think that's a lot of what art is. When you look back through history and you see a lot of the, you know, great painters or sculptures or, you know, buildings that were created, there was a lot of pain and blood and sweat and tears that go into those things. And, you know, maybe, you know, like what Ryan was saying earlier, maybe I'm not around the right type of artist now, but I don't see that in the art community anymore.
Well, so does that mean we need to, I mean, does that itself, the fact that art involves pain and all this kind of tension and so forth, mean that we need to move into new types of art, new forms?
Yeah, some masochistic art. Well, my spiritual leader and guide, J.J. Jones, he gets on to me all the time because he says, you have this complex where you think you have to, like, suffer for your art. And he tells me not. No, that's erroneous thinking. Hmm. Yeah.
Well, that's I don't know. I kind of think you do have to suffer for your art. And the reason I would think that is because I think art has to be presenting something new. And newness sort of comes from confrontation of some sort. Whether it's confrontation between me and a, you know, my own limits or whatever it is.
I don't like to make confrontational art in the sense that it's polarizing, but I like to make art that confronts the senses.
Yeah. Well,
essentially,
and I think that's a good point about art has to push the envelope or, you know, go after something new. You know, I always love to, you know, look at Star Trek and how, you know, that was a precursor. And you look at Data, the android or, and, you know, how he loved art and he wanted to be an artist so badly, but all he could do was paint these beautiful paintings, but they had all been painted before. And so as we become more interlaced with technology, is that really what we're doing? Are we just rehashing the same ideas and the same art over and over again?
I kind of think that there is definitely a tendency to do that, but I had, see, this occurred to me the other day. My question was, are romantic comedies an eternal thing? Like, I guess romantic comedies have been around for a long time in my life, I guess. And so it seems like, oh, well, we discovered this particular slice of movies we should create, and we're just going to always create them year after year. And then I thought, maybe not. Maybe there comes a point at which we've exhausted all the space for romantic comedies and we have to move on to something significantly different. I mean, and I don't think romantic comedies have been around forever. So that seems like at some point someone, you know, moved on from something else, come up with those. So it does seem like we're pursuing, you know, kind of exploring territory. And we eventually have to move on. We can't just leave a robot churning out romantic comedies for the rest of eternity.
The Artist. You need to watch The Artist.
I haven't watched that yet.
It's a good film.
Why is it a good film?
Well, it's kind of... Well, I guess they're using an antiquated form.
Silent film.
But it's basically following this individual who was a prominent figure in the silent film industry, mm-hmm. who did not, who resisted the changes that were happening, and he had to, you know,
yeah,
there were some consequences to his rigidity. And I shouldn't say too much, but he wasn't.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Just go watch the film.
Fast forward.
But again, I mean, since silent films have, you know,
right,
have not been
produced regularly,
I think you can go back and rehash that, you know.
Yeah, that's, you can do something different with it now that we're in a different context. Mm-hmm. Even though it may be you're doing technically the same thing, it now takes on a different meaning.
But it has salience because it was no longer, you know, used as a...
We were talking before we started recording about how usually the people who discover an idea or the pioneers of an idea don't profit from that. And I think that goes into the artistic world as well. And so I think with these changes, and as we, you know, get closer and closer to the apex of Moore's curve, I think for artists, technologists, researchers, whatever field you're in, the window of opportunity gets smaller and smaller for you.
Yeah.
And so I think we're in a very exciting time for art. I think that there are a lot of changes. I think that there are a lot of, opportunity for growth and for new mediums and new presentations of old mediums. Because if you look at film, it's not really new. It's just been improved upon. Yeah. So, if I'm not smart enough to see what the next medium of art is, but hopefully, I can see it when it does happen, so I can jump on it and be the one that does profit from it.
Well, there's one thing that Venkat, who I mentioned a minute ago, he has an article called Technology and the Baroque Unconscious. And it's what he's saying is basically that technologically we live in a time where the canvas is just expanding so rapidly, and it wants things to fill it up, essentially. And so all our technology is taking the form of this expanding canvas. So like the iPad or the iPhone basically has no features. It just tries to be this canvas because there's so much that it's trying to do, so many possibilities, essentially. We're entering a time in which it becomes almost impossible to parody certain things because they are their own parody. An iPad is its own parody. If you just kind of drew a rectangle, that would be a parody of an iPad. So the thing is this, you know, the internet and our, the technium is this just vast canvas that kind of wants to be filled. And I would say the reason why social media has exploded the way it has is because that was the quickest way to fill the most amount of space. And it's, you know, most of it's garbage, but the canvas has to be filled. And so I think artists have the challenge of the canvas wants better things, you know, and we're not keeping up our part of the bargain. So that's our challenge, I think.
So are we issuing that challenge
to this all is a challenge to you out there,
to everyone
everyone, we would everywhere
issue it to ourselves first, but
oh, yeah.
I read a really interesting article recently about, you know, all the science fiction, and none of it predicted social media, or there's no social media in anyone's future.
Star Trek.
It's not there. You know, you don't see, you know, Captain Picard, you know, tweeting, you know, it doesn't happen.
It's true.
And so this article pointed out, you know, that this was missed by all of these futurists and writers. But I like to think of it as, the world actually listened to the challenge that you just issued And nobody needed to, you know, fill those channels with that garbage, because there was, you know, so much bandwidth of actual substance that's created. And so I think that is a really great opportunity that not a lot of people are taking advantage of. And I know it's a challenge that I need to take, you know, in my life as well.
Yeah. I like it. I like it. Well, any last words? I think this is a good, you had some last words that I'm cutting
out. Oh, it's extraneous. I didn't get into my mini rant.
We should make that a bonus track.
We should have a segment every time, my mini rant. So
that's
recently I was at an artist talk, and somehow we all ended up, everyone there wasn't a very large crowd of people. And I actually showed up late because I wanted to skip the artist talk, but somehow I arrived right as it was going on. I think they said it would be happening at an earlier time, and then there weren't people there, they waited. Yeah. But anyway, so we had to go around in a circle. We ended up going around in a circle and telling everyone what we did or what we do. And
show up late. That was really
the artist happened to be an environmental artist. That's what he liked to call himself. And then someone else in the crowd, they said, I think of myself as an environmental artist as well. And so then I was thinking, okay, so you have these environmental artists who are manipulating objects, are manipulating the environment to suggest that there should be limitations to how you manipulate objects or manipulate the environment. And that's my mini rant. I think they're contradictory. And, you know, I just want to distance myself from environmental artists. I am an environmental artist too. I manipulate my environment. And if you want to be prudish and tell me that there are ways I can't, I've got a few words for you. are for another place and another time.
Very nice. Very nice.
Is it over now?
This has been broadcast from the Singularity.
I'm Mike Redding.
I'm John Yates.
And I was going to try to think of something else to say, like, I'm Ryan Hogan. And this before I say any more,
this has been the Singularity.